Hey everyone, thanks for listening to my podcasts here on the Hullerstubber feed. Do spread the word to other people if you think they might enjoy them. Do listen to some more if you think you might enjoy them, but do enjoy this one. I am shortly going to be on tour with my new stand-up show, Can I Have My Ball Back? Head to richardherring.com/ballback/tour for all those dates. Some of them are sold out, some of them have hardly sold anything. It would really help me if you bought tickets to the ones that aren't sold out. Either way, as soon as you can. I think it's going to be a lot of fun. It's about cancer and testicles. One of them's not funny, but one of them's really funny, and it kind of cancels out the unfunniness. I'd say just on average, slightly more funny. So I hope you'll come along. If not, keep enjoying the podcast. We'll be back in September at the Leicester Square Theatre with more live podcasts. Maybe a few Edinburgh ones before then. Sit back, relax, and enjoy this stupid podcast you've chosen to listen to.
A lot can happen in 3 years, like a chatbot may be your new best friend. But what won't change? Needing health insurance. United Healthcare Tri-Term Medical Plans, underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, offer flexible, budget-friendly coverage that lasts nearly 3 years in some states. Learn more at uh1.com.
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Ladies and gentlemen, welcome to the Leicester Square Theatre. Please welcome a man who never eats mixed berry soleros. Why'd you keep asking me about it? Richard Herring! Hello, my finest friends. Welcome. Welcome, one and all. It's still Easter here in the past. Hope we're having a great time. Welcome to Richard Herring's Leicester Square Theatre podcast. I was talking to Mr. Cadbury's Parrot. It's Easter. Remember Mr. Cadbury's Parrot? He calls it Rallastapa. That's what he can speak because he's a parrot. It's fine. I wanted to do one more bit of Easter egg-based material. We bought our kids Cadbury's cream eggs, Easter eggs this year, and my daughter was very excited about it and then so disappointed when she opened it up to discover it was just a hollow shell. And I've seen about three adults saying the same thing on Twitter since it happened. And so I am imploring Ian Cadbury, the inventor of Cadbury, who was, I believe he was crucified for our sins 2,000 years ago, but he rose again. Make a fucking full-size Cadbury's cream egg, you coward. What's wrong with you? No, and I've seen people can make them at home. People have sent me loads of links to that because I mentioned this on Twitter today. I don't want a homemade one. I want to go to a shop, buy an Easter egg that's Cadbury's cream egg, that's a Cadbury's cream egg. You take the top off and then you have to stuff your face into it and eat all the Cadbury's cream egg stuff out. I don't care. I don't care about the calories. I don't care how much it would weigh. I don't care that it would be literally disgusting. Get the fuck on with it and make it. It's not important what it's like. Cream eggs are horrible even when they're little. The people voted for this and you must do it. That's all I'm going to say. I would like to thank for Kickstarter backer George, who backed the Kickstarter campaign at a high level. And he said, just slag the name George off for a bit. That's what he wants, which I'm not... everyone I know, George the Incompetent Sandman, is called George. It's not as stupid just because it's an old-fashioned name. The four kings had, didn't they? And then four in a row, and then there's been another one or two. Six altogether? I don't know. Just fulfilling my remit on that, and that's done. Slagged that off. I've been looking at I'm on Instagram a little bit, and you get Instagram Reels. They give you a little suggestion about Instagram Reels you might enjoy. And I've noticed that nearly all of the Instagram Reels they suggest to me are ones of young women with fairly large breasts wearing bras, jumping about. And I've only watched like about 10,000 of those, and so I find it quite offensive that they're all that and the Trainspotter bloke. That's all I get. That's what I get. Find it a fair... Come on, Instagram. What's wrong with them? Why do people do? What are they doing? Those girls? Why are they doing? I like it, but I don't understand why they're doing it. Makes me feel strange. Anyway, my guest this week. Do you get a lot of those coming up as well? Yeah. No, you don't, madam. No, I was talking to your significant other. He gets a lot of them for some reason. It's just me and him for some reason. They've been pointing us out. Don't know why. My guest this week, he's the third guest in this series, who is best known for their appearance on the Podge and Rog show. We must get Podge and Rog on sometime. Will you please welcome... he's also, of course, in Lindmo. He was on Lindmo, wasn't he? Will you please welcome the incredible Dara O'Brien, ladies and gentlemen, from Lindmo. He's from Lindmo. Dara O'Brien. Welcome. Got double siders. Double siders.
Good evening. How are you?
Tell us about Lindmo. Do you remember being on Lindmo?
What the hell is Lindmo?
It's a Scandinavian chat show.
Scandinavian chat show with that nice lady who does it.
Lindmo. She's called
Lindmo, yeah. And before me, there was a. It was all in Norwegian. Mm-hmm. And surrounded by the most Scandinavian audience you've ever seen in your life. And just incredibly beautiful, perfect skin, glorious, open-minded. And then they shift from Norwegian, which is a fabulous language, du kommer aldri ut herfra. That's a Norwegian phrase for you.
Okay.
That's the Norwegian for you'll never get out of here alive. genuinely. My pronunciation would be perfect. And then they brought me on and I started doing stuff. And I do stuff quite... I speak quite quickly.
You do.
I do speak quite quickly.
You should listen to you on one and a half times on a podcast. Fast.
I find it difficult not to speak quite quickly, even though literally it has limited my career. you know, there's things that had I ever been forced to really listen to myself, I would go, hey, why do we keep going air all the time? I should stop doing that. I should probably start doing that and it might help my career. But no, too late. But I went on Lindmo and I just went for it. And you can see the look of fear in the woman's face as I'm doing a bang 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 bang. And it was like, okay, I got to the end of the 10 minutes having just banged out some stuff about Norway and some observational jokes about Oslo. And she went, okay, thank you, Darabreen. And then every just turned and went, and the whole thing immediately reverted back to Norwegian very happily in a real, what the fuck is that? Kind of a vibe. But it was, yeah, it was great. It was
really good. Yeah. Podge and Rog?
Podge and Rog, two very, very funny people who have loosely linked to the whole Zig and Zag empire and Dustin the Turkey, whatever, big legendary characters, yes. And they had their own show because they had a thing called A Scare at Bedtime in which they would tell ghost stories, these two characters, because they're famously very scary. They also came on the panel once. The panel was a show I did in Ireland, which was just people sitting around the table. And there's one particular episode, and it was me and people like Andrew Maxwell and Ed Byrne and a couple of the comics. And they came on and they just fucking trashed us. And it was just the most lovely piece because we were like, oh, cock of the hoop, we're all young men, being comics is great. And we brought on two puppets who just fucking destroyed us. And in a real kind of, oh, Ted Burns is here, not getting as much work as he used to, are you, Ed? And then this kind of shit, like whatever. You're not as popular in England, Dara, as you used to be. This kind of stuff. And we just tore into us. So all the time in the world for Podge and Rog.
Yeah, okay.
Yeah.
Can you believe it's 9 years since you were on this podcast?
No, I can't. I genuinely can't because nothing has changed. it's honestly, I am having sort of PTSD for a Helstipper. It is, which by the way, is no help when you write into your diary, which is how your family works now off thing, and if you just write Rahulstapa and then turn to your wife at 6 and go, no, I'm going out, and she said, what the fuck is that thing in your diary? And I go, it's Rahulstapa, as I said as I run out the door, and she's like, what the fuck is it? She still doesn't know. And for all she knows, I'm spying or something.
Yeah,
I don't know.
It would make sense.
What, you're going to know, the Norwegian chat show. So yeah, was it 2013?
Yeah, 2013. So you were very early. I mean, that's what's weird is I think those, because we started in May 2012, so it's been going for 10 years, basically 10 years now, but we'll have accelerated that in the past for people who are listening at home. You being on, I think, oh, that felt like 3 or 4 years into it as well. So the early ones feel like they were really spaced out.
Yeah.
And then, and Yeah, but it's, time is a weird thing as we get older. You're 50 years old now, Dara.
I am. It's 50 this year, yeah.
Yeah, how are you feeling with that?
I find it feels solid. It feels like, you know, I ditched any sense of, you know, I'm a young man skirting around the things, whatever. I remember having a conversation once with Lee Mack not that long ago at backstage or something where he went, yeah, you, like me, you still think you're a new comedian, don't you? And I went, fuck, am I not? He goes, no, you're late 40s. So I'm kind of settling into your venerable, you know, older comedian status now. Other people get booked, that's fine, it's their turn. And I'm bitter and angry in any way about that. It shows I've not done for a long time. And then my job is to amplify other things, is to retweet and go, hey, what an ally I am to young comedians coming through. I love their work. Oh, it's so exciting to see this format of new people coming through. Oh, I love it. And doing their fresh, exciting thing, these cunts. But I think I'm quite so happily slipping into that now. That zone.
Yeah. Is it as a human being rather than the comedian, if such a thing is possible for us comedians?
Who knows? Who knows how they think in these situations? Perhaps it's very depressing for them, for they have nothing left. But I am a comedian, and even nothing left, it works for me. It's grist to my comedian mill. It is all fuel for the fire that burns for you. Digs into you, drags you down, makes you angry about the failures of your life. But for me, they're hilarious anecdotes. So fuck you. I've chosen well and you have not.
I think you've always...
Rarely do you get a round of applause or nearly a round of applause. It is quite as hostile and demeaning to an audience as I was there. You have made shitty choices. However, I'm able to weaponize things that just depress you.
So. When they get home and listen to this a bit slowed down, they're going to be fucking furious.
I was just carried along by the bonhomie and the Irish charm. And all of a sudden, it turns out I was the victim in this. Damn you, O'Brien. Another reason to be depressed.
As a man, do you feel like your powers are fading and waning as a 50-year-old? I think 50 is sort of all right. I'm nearly 55. So.
Okay, I do think it's the last good one.
Yeah.
I did, because I couldn't have a party because it was in the middle of Omicron.
Yes.
And so I couldn't have a party. And I did want to have a party because I think the 50th is the last party at which you can do an upbeat speech. hopefully, obviously people have had bad luck, but I think the speech at 50 where you go, Christ, what a fabulous journey it's been, and you hug your wife and you look at your kids, as opposed to the party at 60 where you go, I just want to say a big thanks to Aurora, who's been with me for the last couple of years and has really got me through some difficult times. You know, then of course there was the illness, and so the last 10 years have been pretty tough, but you know, so thank you, the three of you who are still friends with me after all of this, that kind of, who were there. Sadly, my kids couldn't be here because they don't care, fuck them all. I think 50 is the last but kind of positive, triumphant one.
I think you are correct.
So I may yet hold a party just because then I can make a speech.
Okay.
Scott. Because basically, the amount of actually universally beloved speeches you get to make where people are just totally on your side is limited enough, like in life. There'll be like at your own wedding, you know, at a funeral of a loved one. Okay, that's an easy, that's an open goal. Fuck me, that's gold. That's so easy. The tension's in the room already. It's fantastic.
Yeah, it's
boom, everything you say, other fuck on your side. And then maybe something like a birthday party that's there for you. But after that, then when you're actually having the party in Spearmint Rhino, that's a bad 60th birthday party.
Yeah.
Where they go, look, we got to be out of here at 8 because the new shift come on, and they're less happy with me.
Father and bride, maybe. Maybe.
Oh, that's another one. Yeah, absolutely. I suppose that would be, because again, expectations are low.
Yeah.
I mean, it is just the thing that comedians, I presume I speak for all of us, hate is laughs gotten by people who aren't funny in situations where the tension makes anything they say funny. And that fucks me off. And in ascending order, funny vicar.
Yeah.
Yeah. Person shouting something at tennis, getting a big laugh. And then mildly funny line in a dramatic play just fucks me off. And I you can't sit at a 4 o'clock showing of some, you know, of The Mousetrap and then have all the people go ho ho and then go, it's not a fucking joke. And I will go up there and I will do if you cunts are laughing at that, you fucking strap yourself in, bitches, because I am going to fucking unleash hell on you. If you thought, oh, not so much Jeffrey, ho ho ho, fuck you. Wait till you get 10 minutes of my classic material. That is. Again, you can't do that Wimbledon, though. You can't just stand up and go, hey, has anyone ever considered?
I think you should give it a go. I mean, now you're over 50, I think you'll find you can do things like that. You can stand it's up in place and just go.
It's not quite I grow old, as you wear my trousers rolled. I'm 50, so I can just fucking do material in centre court between the points. Like, yeah. Has anyone noticed? That you do stuff, do your stuff. No.
Yeah, that would be good.
Unearned laughs. Fuck
how off. Did you fight? You must have struggled during lockdown, Dara. With that. I feel like it. Maybe it's coming out tonight, but it's...
Crowd.
How was... You sort of,
I did not know who I was. Did I exist? Was I anything without strangers appreciating shit I did every 15 seconds? I was nothing. I became vapor. I became just air. I was. I could see through and was like a ghost with no genitals. A popular theme on this show. But it was... there was a kind of... I get this anyway between tours, that I get very fidgety when I'm not touring because yeah. I'm not doing the thing and I'm nothing without the thing. So it is... I there's no me. There's no there. It is... There's no... Who is this onion? We peel it with the layers. Is there any middle of the onion? No, there's more onion all the way down. And it is... But it was all onion. It was just like 2 years of onion. 2 years of an onion you couldn't open. You couldn't take the fucking cardboard off the outside of an onion. How do they grow the cardboard on the outside of an onion? That is astonishing. And why don't more products do? Because it's literally... Anyway, but the I... filed away as ideas that need work. But no, I was nothing. I was really kind of... I mean, obviously, I was a father to three who homeschooled, yeah. And it was all that stuff was going on. Like whatever. But it was also... It was a real flick because my wife was a doctor. Remains a doctor. Is it in the past tense? Unless shit's gone bad in the last week. She'd be off doing that stuff, like whatever, and then she'd arrive back in, and I would, like a 50s housewife, run to the door when she came back and go, tell me stories of the world, tell me stories of things, of what grown-ups were talking about. What were the grown-ups talking about? Because I had been trying to teach it to a three-year-old how to read, and it is not fun. So yeah, it was. I found it very... Yeah, yeah.
Yeah.
The short answer is yes. And I found it weird, yeah.
You took up... Well, you didn't take up, but you started photographing the sky.
Right? I did. I dorked out a lot. I became a total dorkus malorcus. And because I bought a telescope, and then I bought another telescope, and then I bought cameras for a telescope, and then I bought other telescopes under which I bought other cameras, and I went really big in the whole thing. And then I wrote a routine, which is kind of funny. I wrote a routine about it because I thought there was funny stuff in it. I don't know why I thought there was a funny stuff in it. But I wrote a routine about it. It involved a line. I don't know. It's just fucking star. They're just dots. They're just fucking dots. And anything even a big, they just get more dots. That's all you get, right? And then I went and did that, and that worked okay here in the UK. That worked okay. They're just dots routine.
Yeah.
And then I went to Ireland, and the audience were like, "Ah, no." And it was really kind of sweet because the audience went, "No, you really like this stuff, so we don't believe you." And it was really nice. The audience all went, "No, you don't believe it. We don't believe it. You're a big fucking nerd, and you can't suddenly back away from it now." And so I dropped the material because it was clearly the audience, "No, you're lying about this." So I went and I sat in the garden. I did that. I did that. I continue to do that when I can. Yeah.
Did you discover any new planets?
No, I don't. No, you don't. No. What the fuck? This shit. We've been doing this for fucking ages, right? It's not like... Irritating is when Galileo did it, like for his first telescope. Galileo discovered three fucking moons in the first month and then went, that's enough. And then he put the telescope away and did not pick the fucking telescope again, I think. Oh, it certainly didn't discover any more shit. Nothing else discovered for 80. But Galileo went, bang, 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 that's all new, lovely stuff. Name them after me, job done. What? Oh, yeah, the fucking... Yeah, okay, I'll sit in the house for the next 40 years. That's the part of the history of Galileo's life. And he finally got forgiven hundreds of years later. But it's all been discovered. It's not like I look and I go, whoa, what's that thing? And I send it into somebody goes, oh, wow, we didn't see that before. I suppose you could. If something got flung... I mean, that's a fucking plot of Deep Impact. If something gets flung in from the asteroid belt or from the outer reaches of it all, like whatever, then if it comes in, yeah. I mean, one of them could be mine. I have an asteroid named after me.
Okay.
Yeah, which is 49010 Obrien, which sits in the asteroid belt in between Mars and Jupiter, and I can see the thing. I wouldn't be able to see it, but it's mapped the orbit of it and how far away it is, like whatever, and that could potentially get bounced into an orbit that would destroy life.
Yeah, that'd be great, wouldn't it? Imagine
the press for that. I could pick and choose what I did that day. No, I'll do Lorraine. I want... Lorraine's always been good to me. She's always supported me during the quiet periods. Fuck Norton. And I'm trying to get on Norton for years. Oh, I'm not good enough. Oh, really? Am I not good enough for Q anymore? Well, fucking Lorraine has stuck with me. I'm doing everything. We're going to do an hour special, me and Lorraine, who is a big nerd herself, by the way.
Okay.
As you must know, obviously, the...
But
Lorraine would be fine. We'd be all over that. Like 11 o'clock in the morning on ITV would be fantastic. Yeah. There's a space to do it.
What did you think about the guy, I've forgotten his name, who thinks that the asteroid that passed, well, the thing that passed through the solar system was possibly a bit of a spaceship? Did you see that?
I saw. I remember hearing that being a topic, doesn't it? I didn't know there was a guy. I didn't know it was Bob's theory, and that therefore I should pick on Bob. You know, it was mentioned. Thing. I mean, genuinely, is it that guy? You want to focus on the guy who said this? Or
well, there was a guy because he sent me. They sent me his book. To be on, and I didn't buy it. It felt a bit Von Daniken to me.
I was hoping you'd say Eric Von Daniken. Eric Von Daniken, Chariot of the Gods, was an enormously popular book when I was about, we'd have been late teens, I was early teens. And Eric Von Daniken wrote a book that said, all of the pyramids are in the same, because people came along and made the pyramids and these things are all connected and it's fucking horseshit at the highest order. But occasionally you meet people who really go for it, who still believe it, and they say it to you. I was going to say something, but I'm not going to say it because it's unfair. Although she did an entire fucking podcast on BBC One about fucking conspiracy theories, and it was ridiculous. But Eric Von Daniken was a character of the gods who wrote like whatever. Yeah, but it is. Yeah, it might be Rendezvous with Rabbit. It might be a thing that has stuff in it that would physically. Because when Voyager, which we've sent out, eventually hits another solar system, whatever, it will just fucking shoot past them at a stupid speed. Yeah. And like we've took a record on it with loads of stuff, with pictures of some guy with his cock out, his hand in the air, the kind of a, look at me, what threat do I pose with this? And the woman going, I know, and then pictures of, and like sounds of, bird song and stuff like that. It's a very random thing. And we sent out this record and instructions as how to build a record player. And a flyer for Tower Records. Because once you build the first thing, then you start buying vinyl. The idea is we get them hooked on buying vinyl, and then they're in Manchester all the time. They're going to all these little shops, and they're all going, oh, blah, blah, blah. That's an alien making an alien noise as he flicks through the soul funk. That's good. I've been looking for that. And then they get way down with vinyl and they don't think to fight us. That's the aim. And it's all shit they bought before, 40 years earlier. That's the fucking twist. That's why we're building up the vinyl industry again. I'm sorry. What was the question?
It doesn't matter. I was watching you talking to Stephen Hawking.
Yes.
The day. And when it wasn't today, but he was...
No, he's we not haven't spoken in a while. God love
But he kind of he was pissing on a lot of chips. Possibilities of the time travel.
He was a fucker for that. I said it to myself, and I said, "You're a fucker for that." I said, Stephen. And your silence speaks volume. He was a great man for delivering a punch. Genuinely a great man for delivering a punch. A little bit later, he was very good at that. It would take him a while, God love him, to do the thing and to type it out, whatever. But then he would deliver the punchline to whatever had gone on sometime later. He was very good at that. But he did, he posited a theorem that said you can't travel backwards in time. You can only travel forwards in time because it'll create create paradoxes. Too many paradoxes. It can't work. Thus killing Terminator and Back to the Future.
Yeah.
And also Back to the Future, the musical, which would be an awful shame. just what was that? I see. I mean, I'm in that, and it's great. And we're a happy team. And I play the headmaster, and McFly. I'm able to combine with it because I only have two scenes. I run in, do them really quickly, and then I'm out again. McFly. But Hawking has killed us, and so we had to shut it down. We shut the play down. No, and that one about the Temptations is going in instead from next week. So
But he was against sort of, because again in the papers today they were talking about sending out messages to try and get, here we are, come and get us.
You're sending a beacon. And they're so far away they wouldn't come and get us.
Yeah.
I mean, the thing is, he's a very, very smart man. But it is essentially what you're doing. You're announcing yourself. But we're looking for people announcing ourselves. We can't get there. So, like, I mean, six. This is always the thing about that we never said on Stargazing Live. There are a number of things we didn't say on Stargazing Live, you know, and among them was, we're never going to get there. We say, okay, oh, it's amazing, all the planets, all the universe is, we're never going to get there. But we'd never bring it, because it's just too fucking far away, it won't take too long, like, whatever, it's grand. And they'd all talk about, oh, we'll do multi-generational spaceships. But if you're in a multi-generational spaceship, in other words, you, the crew, have babies, and they grow up, and they then man the crew, at some point, 30 years later, the babies will go, we've never even seen Earth. Fuck this shit, and they turn the space around and they go back to Earth. Like, whatever, it's what they would do. Like, yeah, so.
Well, they could send robots, right?
They could send robots, you're absolutely right, yeah. And the robots could send pictures back and do all sorts of things. Like, yeah.
Would it be cheating to have sex with one of those robots just before they, especially just before they went on the mission?
It's never cheating to have sex with a robot.
No.
Do you mean within a marriage, within the framework
of you were married, you're married now, and I'm married now, if just before they popped off, you said, I'm just going to fuck the robot that's going off to. And then it's not like, you know, it's just a one-off thing. Even if your wife doesn't like it, you go, it's all right, they've gone now, they're definitely not coming back.
I definitely, I have the laminated cards that all married people carry, like whatever, and I've got a number of Hollywood starlets, and then the robot that goes to a distant planet is the number one. So I'm allowed to fuck the robot if such a situation, if we're in a bar and at the next table, I go, hey, are you the robot who's going to space? And he goes, yes, I am. And then you can fuck the robot. Yeah. And also the robot won't know.
No.
So it's okay. Like, yeah, no, I think you're always...
Well, if they don't know if they've been fucked, they're not going to be very good about finding if they found another civilization. How are they going to know they found another... If they don't even know you fucked them, how are they going to know what an alien is?
It would be awkward if the robot arrived at different celebrations and I come in peace and they're like covered in jizz and they raise their hand as a peaceful gesture and there's splat jizz all over alien faces. That'd be awkward. Yeah. That'd be a bad situation. I never got Westworld. Do you remember when they remade Westworld?
I do, yeah.
Yeah, and it was like, oh my God, but the robots have been oppressed. And you're going, no, I get oppression, genuine human on human oppression. That's a fucking valid thing, where to get it. But these are fucking toys. Sorry, this is Toy Story with sex toys. And why am I supposed to be upset? I'm going, oh no, the vibrators have been misused. They're fucking sex toys. I'm sorry, they're very sophisticated sex toys. But it was like, at no stage did they show people being hunted by the robots. And the terror was all from the robots' point of view. And you're going... Really, there's nothing. Remake it again. Remake it again with scary robots.
The robots loving it. Oh, loving it. Yeah. We all made me fucked them. We love it.
Fucking, you know, but you might as well go, oh no, my vibrator won't is chasing me around the house. And somebody goes, yeah, but what about the vibrator's feelings? It's a fucking vibrator. This is nonsense.
I agree with you.
Thank you.
But my wife does not agree with you. talking of aliens covered in jizz, you've written a children's book about science.
I have.
Is that in there?
I have. It's called What's That on the Alien's Hand?
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me, because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Hey everyone, I'm Craig Robinson, co-host of the Ways to Win podcast, alongside my good friend John Calipari. I've been on the go recently, Phoenix, Kansas City, Chicago. If you're like me and have a home but aren't always at home, you have an Airbnb. Hosting your home or a spare room is a very practical side hustle. If you live in a big game town, you can Airbnb your place for fans to stay in. Your home might be worth more than you think. Find out how much at airbnb.com/host.
Talking of aliens covered in jizz, you've written a children's book about science.
I have.
Is that in there?
I have. It's called What's that on the alien's hand? keep the kids away from the aliens is the first thing, like whenever they're groupie. Yeah. I've written a number of them.
You've written a few, yeah.
I've written three of them. Like, yeah.
And is there anybody out there?
That was, yeah, do you know what? Unnecessary second dare.
I know, I was going to say.
Yeah, it's really, really clumsy and the ink wasted on that. Is anybody out there would have worked just as well? Is there anybody out
Although
there?
Although it is what I think it is the way a child would say it. So if it's a book.
Child didn't write the book. The point wasn't to ape the voice of a child. The point is for me to say things and then the child to be entertained or informed by it, like whatever. There are solid bits of, there's loads of stuff in them. There's loads of facts in them. I think weirdly here, it's a more difficult place. Here, the UK versus Ireland. In Ireland, again, they totally take it on. Oh, yeah, you love that shit. And so you're probably really into it. So let's buy those books for our kids. So we get World Book Day in Ireland. I get loads of people whose kids really like whatever. Whereas here, it's like, oh, another fucking celebrity's written a book. There cannot be anything useful in this. Why are they all killing the book industry, right? And I'm going, it's just loads of sciencey stuff. It's just things about planets and stuff like that, like whatever. So it's kind of weird you get caught into that thing. It's very, this country can be quite cynical about things.
I think especially if someone is someone who writes things, which most comedians are.
I always say this. It's the fucking most insane thing whenever I see someone going, oh, you're all just jumping on the bandwagon. You, like David O'Doherty or all these people who actually fucking they're actual writers who just happen to stand up and do the stuff. Like, it's not like we've got a team of people going, fuck me, get the stuff into his mouth as fast as possible because they would be, you know. But it is a, I think it's a weird criticism to make of comedians that how dare they write books, because that's what we do. That's literally all we've done. For years and years in Edinburgh, like whatever, but people get, you know, I think people are quite cynical in this country.
But I think also, like, kids, and when I was a kid, I loved comedians and I loved comedy, and so if a comedian wrote a book, you would read the book, which is what you need to get kids to do. So if you're writing
they're very accessible, 7 to 12 year old, loads of really fun sciencey bits in it, and I really enjoy doing them. But I just think it's kind of a weird. Yeah, it's not a market that isn't serviced, but there's loads of really great science books for kids, which is a great thing, right? Yeah. It's kind of just another one of those, like whatever, it's nice to be part of it. And you get the odd knock-on effect of people sending you photographs of their kid asleep with a book on them in space pajamas or something like that. It's really sweet. Or on World Book Day, now they've fucking shifted tone from the stuff earlier. On World Book Day, they're dressed as scientists or they're dressed as astronauts or whatever, holding the book, like whatever. And that's really, really
cool. Did I see someone dressed as you on World Book Day?
Yes, which was uncanny. a young Irish lady, and it really was just a fucking hat, a cap, some sort of rubber cap on the head, and a big thumbs up. And I was like, "That's me. You got me. You've nailed me. You've nailed the essence of me right there." So it's fine.
Very good. And look, I talked to Robin Ince about this, and he didn't get how clever I am.
You talked to
Robin Ince. You know, oh, yeah. Robin Ince.
I do know Robin.
If the universe is infinite, right?
Yeah.
Then everything's meant to be played out somewhere.
Somewhere, yeah, yeah.
But I think some things wouldn't play out somewhere, right? I think there's infinite stuff, but it's an infinite.
So
stuff. Because, like, if there's an infinite number of universes that are exactly the same as our universe right up to this point, but from this point onwards, I suddenly make the decision to only speak in Spanish, even though I can't speak Spanish and have never learned Spanish, and for the rest of my life, I speak fluent, correct Spanish.
Okay.
Make no mistakes.
You're making it sound weird, but I would applaud the effort. If you move this entire thing into Spanish, I'll fucking come with you.
Okay.
I'll take the entire thing in Spanish with you, or some Spanglish version.
Yeah, but it's not. It's got to be perfect, eloquent perfect Spanish. That's got to happen if the universe is infinite and everything happens, because that's possible that I could just accidentally.
Yeah, okay, but equally,
I could make the decision and then accidentally do it.
I don't think there is a universe in which you suddenly turn into a beautiful golden bird and then fly around the room and shit golden eggs on everyone's head. Right? Yeah. Okay. I think it still has to be a thing that has a causal link to the previous thing.
Yeah.
So you can't. So it's not like.
So therefore, not everything happens. And also some things that could happen won't happen because we make choices.
Yeah, but the idea is that there would be a place where we would make different choices.
Yeah, but I wouldn't make the choice to speak Spanish for the rest of my life when I can't speak Spanish.
Yeah, okay. I'm not sure how you think you've beaten science in this situation. But I yield to you.
There's no universe in which I now get interrupted by a phone call and it's the England manager saying, Richard Herring, we decided to play you in tonight's game. That wasn't scheduled.
Yeah, there was no. But we decided to have a quick match. We've thrown together.
We decided to play Russia at football.
Yeah.
Despite the international consternation that will cause, and also you're playing in goal.
We also need you to sing the Russian national anthem as you present a dove to the Russian captain, and in your support for the denazification of Ukraine. No, all of it is wrong. All of it is unhelpful. This, like, whatever. Yeah, there are things that won't happen. You're absolutely the things that won't happen.
And so, if there are things that won't happen, that means you can still have an infinite number of things that can happen, but they can just be an infinite variety of different things.
They'll all broadly all be very, very similar, I imagine, and tiny little things will branch off, like whatever's grand.
But the minute you change one thing...
That's a different... Now you're doing the butterfly effect. And if it's just one tiny thing, then the other side of the universe. Okay. Thing will happen in Japan.
All right. It's just something I'm interested in. No one else is. I can tell from the atmosphere in the room.
I feel we were cooking on gas earlier. Yeah. Now, fuck me, it's gone cold.
But unfortunately, we're in the universe where I've decided to talk about nothing else. Blockbusters.
I kill that fucking franchise.
If they come to me and do Blockbusters,
what
I would have done, beginning of every episode, on air, I'd have gone, now, listen to me, you pricks. Anyone says, can I have a pee in a funny way, you're off the fucking game straight, okay? Fuck off if you do that. Right, on with the game. That's what I would do. And then I'd just play it straight from there.
I mean, why was it necessary to do it on air? Surely you could just quietly say it.
Because you'd need to let everyone know that we're stopping that. And then you'd nip that in the bud. Yeah, no one dares to do it.
Fair enough, yeah. I mean, firstly, peas do appear. And people have to literally say the word, can I
just
have a pee?
Say it in a funny way. They say it like
the
this.
Audience, you have to actually say it to the audience more, because the audience are so hot for that. It is actually number four on the list of unearned laughs. Behind the vicar and the tennis and an afternoon play is, can I have a pee, please? And the audience all go, ho, 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 ho. And then, can I have an E, please? Retro, ho, ho, ho. Yeah. Right? But it was very difficult. And it actually, my silent thing was, you'll never see me laugh at it. I wasn't doing a thing, whatever, but I didn't look stern and... Oh, don't come at me with this old material. But I kind of like, okay, I just gave him a pee.
I'd have punched a couple of them just to let them know. And then bonhomie after that.
Oh, of course.
Let's enjoy the game.
That's probably a good way to host a quiz show, which is you give a couple of slaps early, you establish your alpha male status within that room, right? Yeah. And then they're so scared that any warmth from you at all, it becomes amplified by the contrast. And they're going, oh, he's being nice to us now. If you did the entire thing in some weird, like, split, I don't know what the term, I'll use the wrong term, I don't want to use the wrong term, but like where you're like veering violently between really negative and then really kind, and they have no idea what's going on, so all their instincts are thrown. Yeah, one has tried to do a show like that.
No one has said,
let's take an old format. I mean, I don't know, let's do Every Second Counts like that. Which you just punching the shit like whatever. The one that we should bring back is the Henry Kelly one.
Yeah, Going for Gold.
Going for Gold, right? But Going for Gold, hosted by you, saying to be from a pan-European base of contestants, we'll go, hello, I am Henrik. Shut the fuck up, Henrik. What are you doing on an English-language quiz show? You're clearly disadvantaged here. Or when they say, because Going for Gold had the thing where every time them would go, he would have a round called, who am I? Right? Remember that?
Yes.
And he would go, the next round is, who am I? And he said, who am I? And then myself and my sister, who were 14, 15, so I would always go, Henry Kelly. If everyone did that instead, that every time we do who
I
am
don't
I?
Think I'd be allowed to host Going for Gold, because I have admitted on this podcast that as a younger man, I used to...
Wank to the gold? You went.
I went to Going for Gold. If it was like an attractive European lady,
but they just
it was very difficult to want.
Really is it? Welcome, Marina from Belgium. Fucking hell, look at Marina from Belgium. She's not doing it. She's not even swaying in a sexy way. She's just standing there, looking nice.
And then you have to get
battering away. Fucking hell, Marina.
Before Henry. And then I lived it. So I think they'd be worried that I would.
Yeah. Okay. Don't book anyone hard. Oh, fuck. No. episode 3 is a tough one because that Spanish woman's on, she's quite sexy, and he's going, oh, Conchita. Was there not a danger as you're doing this? And I appreciate your honesty in this. Like, as you're hitting the peak, right? Yeah. As you're getting to the point, right?
Yeah.
That suddenly they flash up Henry Kelly going, yeah, who am I? And you're going, fucking, I don't know who you are, but you're getting in the fucking face. And it's... This is for Conchita.
There was a danger of that, yeah. I'm not sure I ever got to completion, but I tried.
Okay,
I tried.
Yeah.
I can't remember. I used to... There was no pornography. There was no internet, was there, in those days?
There was no internet in those days, so you had no idea what was going on. No. What was happening in the world? We're all in our little bubbles. Do you know who wrote the theme music to Go
For Gold? I do. It was the guy who wrote all of those. His name's Hans Zimmer.
Who wrote all the music for the Batman movies, the Christopher Nolan movies. Bwarp. That guy who does all of that shit, right? Okay. That everything he writes is bwarp, right? And he fucking held off the bwarp for Going For Gold. Because it's da-da-dun, da-da-da-dun, da bwarp. That'd be a far finer version if it's just like, the heat is on. And you're there fucking whacking furiously. And then, bwarp. And then,
I still get a little twitch when anyone sings it. So.
Oh, going for gold. Bwarp.
Good. Was it nice doing Blockbusters?
It was great to do Blockbusters. Yeah. It was fun. It was silly. It was nice. And then the company who made it, it was Comedy Central, did it or whatever. They changed corporate owners and they suddenly decided to cancel all programs, even though we were booked into 3 more series.
Oh,
TV's a fucking weird business. It really is. And so we're about to do loads more, and then it just stopped. So I would have happily done, but that's, you say all these things. We would have happy done more Robot Wars.
Yeah, I was going to bring up Robot Wars.
We would definitely been happy to do more Go 8-Bit, but they kind of, that was a possibly great format.
Yes.
Sort of slipped away a bit. And that's full of that like, kind of stuff. Irritating. But thanks for going through the regrets of my career. Stare off into the distance, and then the camera just comes down to one light as I go, oh, so many losses, so many.
You've had a lot of hits, Darius. So I like to pick on the failures.
Jesus, Go 8-Bit haunts me to this day.
What about 1 and 6 0s? Is your new
finished last week? Finished last week. Let's see where that goes. Very much one of these things, which is a format, when it was a pilot, and it's fun. But it's all done in COVID era kind of stuff, like whatever. And if it was done properly again, we'd probably do it very differently. Yeah. So don't know. It's very much in stasis, and who knows what'll happen with it because we kind of done where you were shielded from the contestants until 10 minutes beforehand, and they had to stand at some weirdly sort of distant hello, welcome to the fucking Hunger Games, welcome, do not approach me, I am the standoffish host, right? And also that for me, that has happened a few times, that we did a very very fun run through of it, and then we got into the studio, and I have a tendency to, I have a tendency to blurt stuff out and to say things, right? And especially if there's a fact I know. And that often didn't help because I hadn't looked, there's only fucking 7 questions in the show, but I hadn't looked ahead and seen what they were. And in the first show, it was like, let's have a look at the answers. And it was all towns in England, blah, 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 blah. And it was like, oh, Northampton, Wolverhampton, Leicester. And I said, have you been to any of these towns? So the contestant said, I think we're in Leicester. We went to some car park. Of course you did, I said, because that's where King Richard III is. And then a voice in my head went, that's a fucking question.
So you're sort of like the coughing major, but you were the host.
I was going, no, don't answer that. Don't, you fool. You fool, it wasn't Glenn Close. You're an idiot. Like, there were times where because there were other shows where it was all about, oh my God, is it or isn't it? We give them loads of options. And there were times where you're marshalling basically to go to a correct answer, where they would go, maybe it was Anne Hathaway in that film. I don't really remember it. And I go, really? Let's go through the answers again. And they would go, or was it Glenn Close? Oh, I need to push you for an answer right now. I now need to push you for an answer.
Everyone won £1 million.
Ultimately, it's weird. Everyone won £1 million. And it sank. That's why they're selling Channel 4. Because I kept giving away millions of pounds to nice people. What is this on the debit sheet? We've lost £7 million on this show.
I want to just check something from IMDb. I don't know if we discussed this last time, but I wanted to know because I don't remember. There's an IMDb trivia about you, but a lot of IMDb trivia is not true.
Okay, and I'll just put in context, a lot of the IMDb trivia about me specifically is not true because, and I had to trace it back to the producer I had on a TV show called The Panel that we did in Ireland would write a fake biog for us every week. I don't know how he fucking found the time. I mean, producing the show would write a paragraph of each person, which is all fake. And then for some reason, these got percolated into being truth. Okay.
I like, and this there isn't that much trivia about you on the IMDb. This is one of the main bits.
Yeah.
Dara once rescued a parrot from his garden and housed it in his garage until the RSPCA were able to take it away.
Actually, that's true. But it wasn't me who did it. It was my wife who found. And then she texted me and said, oh no, there's an angry parrot in the garden. The parrot, for some reason, flowed into in the front garden. Yeah. And then she brought it into, there's a garage in the front, and she put it in the garage and said, please come, there's an angry parrot in the garage. I don't know what to do with him, right? And so I came and I have a photograph of the parrot and of my wife looking around the corner at the parrot and go, well, why the fuck did you bring him indoors? And so it was one of these things where people dump pets and they dump this parrot. Yeah. And the parrot, clearly the parrot is a cunt. He was an awful parrot. He was a really aggressive, savage parrot, like whatever. Yes, God. I mean, not in the kind of a piratey way. He was going, I'll fucking kill you. He wasn't saying tough words, but he was quite squawky and unpleasant, like whatever. You would not have endured this on a boat trip of any distance. Like, oh, you are a pain in the hole. You know that? You are the worst fucking parrot. Stop biting my fucking ear. You'd have happily, oh, where's your parrot? Captain Hook. He said, oh, he had a terrible accident when I strangled him and now we're eating him for sustenance. But this parrot was a bad parrot.
Yeah.
It was an evil parrot. Yeah. You could tell his eyes. He was up to no good. He was scoping the house out and so therefore he had to be removed. But the RSPCA came in and stuck a net in his head and took him away. Okay. I don't know what happened to him. I mean, he probably turned up in Rolf Harris. An animal hospital.
Yeah.
You know.
I mean,
that would have been a classic episode of a bad parrot and a Rolf Harris. I mean, difficult to know who to sympathise with in that battle, to be honest. I had a conversation once with Stephen Merchant about this because he was away and I met him after for a drink and around the time he said, and for some reason he said, this is really weird. I can't believe that right now Rolf Harris is in jail. I said, I know, you've been away. This is insane because it's just after 20, it all had happened and the whole thing happened. So in this mad rush of things, like whatever. And we discussed about the fact that when we're both in school, we both knew about Savile. Right, because it was a common impersonation. In Ireland, Savile was nothing. Savile was not. I'm going to claim this, and this may be historically inaccurate, that we all went, what the fuck is England doing with Savile? That guy is clearly a nonce. And we went, fuck that, that is weird, right? He was among your weirdnesses, right? And so we all went, ugh, no. So he never really did anything in Ireland at all, as far as I know. I might be wrong with this, but I'm fucking going with this, right? And we all went, oh, no, he's strange. But it was always, the impersonation of Savile was always, child molest. That was part of the impersonation, the standard impersonation. And we had this moment, we went, Jesus, when we came to the BBC, should we have said this? Are we at fault as much as anyone else by not going in and going, I got fucking serious questions about Jimmy Savile here that maybe you should answer, because in every primary school in Dublin we knew this. Why did you know this? Anyway, sorry, this is not important at all.
No, it's true. I was talking about this with the crew actually beforehand, but you know, now there's a clip of me and Stu dressed as Jimmy Savile.
Yes, there is.
Morning, Rich, not Judy.
As if you fucking knew. As if you were the whistleblowers in this situation.
I can't believe we were allowed to do it. So in it, we're dressed as the day of the marathon. We're going, now then. It's London Marathon. I hope nobody dies. And then I say, if they do, Bagsy, I get to take them to the mortuary. And then that's it. I'd say there's no accusation made. He was an ambulance driver, so he just wanted to do his job.
Yeah, absolutely.
But every other time we try to do a joke about Jimmy Savile, our producer would go, you can't do it because he'll sue and blah, you know. So but it was a joke thing, an urban myth thing that I don't know. But I don't know if we, you know,
People, victims genuinely came forward and they were the ones who actually did this. Not any one of us doing a funny joke about it. Like with this guy. It is notable how bad my impersonation of Savile is. I'm very happy that I did a bad impersonation of him. I even forgot to do now then. I can't do impersonations. I'm very bad.
My case comes up next Thursday.
That fucking joke. I don't do voices. I'm not a thing. My Christopher Walken is immaculate. Obviously. Okay. Christopher Walken. It's amazing. It's astonishing. Christopher Walken. Okay, I've got to do more than just the name. I haven't killed anyone since 1987.
That sounds like Chris Tarrant.
No, it's not. It's not. No. Okay. No, it's not. It's really good. Really good. When you when you die, tell the angels in heaven that you never saw evil as incarnated as in the face of the man who killed you. Is it not working? Is it not landing yet?
It's all right.
I mean,
I think concentrate on Chris Tarrant. I mean, you've got a really good Chris Tarrant.
No, wait, let me just do the name again. The name hurts me. Christopher Walken. Yeah.
Today on Instagram, when I wasn't looking at reels, I posted a picture of you. Because you were going to be a guest on the show.
Oh, sorry, okay. Here's a candid shot of Derby I took today from
the garden. It was you wearing a tuxedo, and nearly every comment was, oh, fuck, I thought he died.
Really?
Nearly every comment going, oh, thanks a lot, I thought he was dead, because I'd put a picture of you on Instagram.
In a tuxedo?
Yeah.
The clothes of the dead.
It's like, oh, this is the one I would choose.
It's nice to know that when I die, that the image will be of me in a tuxedo. Yeah. That's like a piano player in Russia where they play, Brezhnev is dead. The minute it appears to me in a tuxedo, you'll go, his time has come. And that's the only we'd want to remember. I'm delighted to hear that people were...
Well, I mean, it's sort of weird that so many people thought that. I do have an emergency question, which is, do you think the photo that will be accompany your obituary has already been taken?
Oh, that's interesting. Yeah, because they make it quite contemporaneous. Like the, Oh, I mean, so is there a dreadful one? There is a kind of a... I mean, the people keep sending me... obviously, the photo of the company would be a picture of a fucking megabus. or any of my many lucky likeys.
I mean, it'd be bold to put that on your obituary. I mean, I hope they do, but I really hope they do.
A small picture of actual me, but mainly a picture of the Megabus guy, which is, even then, be an archive. They'd have to find an old picture, like whatever.
The danger of that is people will go, oh my God, the Megabus died. Oh no, it's all right, it's just
our brain. Okay, fine. Ooh. I mean, it'd be awful if the Megabus guy died. Like, if awful if Gru from Despicable Me had died, but it's okay if the guy who looked a little bit like Gru had died. That's okay, we can process that grief.
Yeah,
so it's really sad that happened. Yeah, no, I mean, I'd like, yeah, I don't know what era.
It's difficult to know because I think, well, hopefully you'll go on for many years, and there may be something in the future that is the biggest thing ever, where you're James Bond, maybe.
Yes, absolutely. Because often I know that they're broadening the search a lot at the moment, and they're going, look, and somebody's getting a dry whiteboard and wiping out the words good looking, young, just fit. No, we don't need that. And none of that. We've got to think outside the box, lads. We've got to think outside the box. Let's go for some maybe balding, slightly heavier man, Irish. But Irish and undeniably probably wouldn't even want to act as if he was, you know, for Queen and Country, would always go every time they said that. That's a bit weird, and wink at the camera. Really, me? Don't fuck it. Anyway, go on, Jesus. Sure, fuck it, I'll do it. If we just me eating Tato crisps, going, what was that? Oh, yeah, okay, yeah, I'll do that, yeah. And then, you know, squeezing into a tuxedo and people going, fuck it, you're dead. I mean, you're just coming out of the casino there, and I just think you had the look of a man who was dead. And I'm very sorry you were dead.
But you know, Rob, I mean, Mock the Week, sitting on the, you're Mock the Week. I mean, Mock the Week, but then Three Men in a Boat.
Yeah,
hang on. It's difficult to know, isn't it?
What point are you going up to?
Trying to work out if it's already been taken. Whether it would
okay,
be.
Okay, sorry. What I would love it to be would be a picture of me on stage. Yeah. I would love that to be a picture from the show. I
mean, it
won't be that. Of course, it won't be that. Even though it's me full length standing there, you know, it's like doing a thing, right? Doing the thing I actually did most of the time. But no, it'll be a picture of me standing next to fucking Matilda the robot, or some fucking format that only lasted a series because we did it once, like whatever, or some ridiculous thing. So it won't be that on a rotating couch for Go 8-Bit. It'll be that rather than actually what I did is my job. Yeah, it's great. Or it'll just say, you're going to bring Frankie Boyle back. I had a guy at an ATM machine shout that at me, but within the last month, go, because it's kind of weird in a kind of a, lads, it was 13 years ago, you're really going to move on, right? But it's particularly, he went, when are you going to bring Frankie Boyle back onto Whose Line's It Anyway? And you're going, how can I unpick this? Bring back, you know, it was then, and oh, but oh, fucking Whose Line? How to explain the history of Whose Line's It Anyway at this stage? The different show. Oh, I fucking give up. Oh, next week, I said, I walked off with my cat.
I'd like to see Frankie on
Whose Line's It Anyway.
Yeah.
Yeah, they should bring the team back for that. They should do that. She'll get Tony and Josie and Frankie, and they're going to all do their games.
Like to just throw Frankie Boyle into the middle of that and just ruin. Yeah, it'd be quite good just to
Frankie
ruin
just fucking blocking every suggestion. No, no. Oh, we're here in the boulangerie. No, bang. It's a fucking joke.
We're not. We're on stage.
Yeah.
How is the tour going? So the tour, is it the same tour? Is it a different tour?
No. I'm one of the fuckers who wrote a new show during the thing, so the people whose tours were cancelled have to now fucking compete with me. We're writing a brand new show, right, which is really unfair, because my tour had just finished when the thing came down. In fact, it was very much my tour that caused it. It's like very much like 12 Monkeys. If you look at the itinerary of my tour and where the thing broke out, it really matches up in a kind of a scary way. You have to see 12 Monkeys recently, which I did. Anyway, but the itinerary was exactly where... I mean, I'm very patient zero in this. Oh, the last night of the tour. Let's all have some bat. You sure? You sure we should? Oh, fuck it, let's do it anyway. So that ended, or almost ended. There's a couple of the odd straggler gig going on, and then during the break, I came out with a new show. So it's a new show.
Yeah.
It's going great. It's predominantly Ireland so far, and then some British dates, and then they take over. But the weird thing about now is because there's a mad cluster of acts coming in who are shows already, and new acts coming in, that actually the UK dates are really spread out, because actually everyone wants to be on in various places. Brighton Dome, I think I'm on in June of next year. That's how much those kind of venues have been grabbed already. So it'll go on over the next period. So it's kind of flipped in a really, really weird way. Normally I do Ireland throughout it all and do Europe at the end, but we're doing Europe now first. We're doing Europe in the summer and all. It's all just a bit weird and upside down.
Yes, of all the things, because my big fear at the start of lockdown was if this lasted a long time, that a lot of the venues weren't going to survive. Mm. And I know a couple of theatres have definitely gone down.
No, it's been okay. Theatres have, in the main, come back, or whatever. It's weird when you tour. Have you toured yet?
No, I've just done a few little gigs here.
When you tour out again, it is like ticking off places that you knew. But, oh, that bar is gone. Oh, that chip shop is gone.
Yeah.
Oh, that's or all Debenhams have gone. So all this main street looks really, really quiet. There's a lot of that as you travel around. And it's really, really striking because you become a tiny creature of habit in each different place, that you have your favourite bar in Derry, your favourite bar in Liverpool, your favourite bar in all the places. As you go around, you have your local for all of the major places you go. My favourite jazz club in Manchester, my favourite whatever. Yeah, we've all of these kind of things.
Yeah.
And so I will wish to go back to these places again. And it's been a nervous kind of thing of going, are you still going? Is that still a place, like whatever? Because a lot of them are shut.
Yeah.
So places are just kind of recovering a bit at the moment.
But luckily, it seems comedy has...
The theatre seem to have survived.
And the clubs as well, on the whole.
As far as I know about the clubs, they seem to be broadly back in. Again, I haven't heard too many victims of it. Somebody will correct us on that.
I'm sure they will.
But it is... Oh, that's fucking... You've gone very quiet because it's become, about small businesses. But it is a... it is a thing that I think the theatres have, luckily, and this particularly for the, I mean, they may have had a churn of staff, that's the only thing, because I think the most difficult people who found out were technical staff and casual staff in theatres who didn't fall into the furlough thing and then basically had to leave and find other things to do, like whatever, and it's all very tough. So, but as far as I know, most of them seem to have come back into it after about a year and a half.
I know the audience is coming back, Chris. Look at this.
This is not a great sign. And this is poor benchmark, and has made me think to rescale the tour. And so there'll be a furious phone conversation after this going, I can't believe it. Like, I mean, you are very much the canary in the coal mine. And I have carried you down into the... And the monoxide has fucking knocked you out.
Yeah.
So I'm shutting down, baby. I'm shutting down. I'm leaving you down there. Fuck you. You're dead. It's great. You can sit in your little cage, your gilded cage, heaving in monoxide. And that's the end of you. But and also every time a new wave occurs, ticket sales drop again because people, I think, go, I'm not going to buy a ticket if it's going to be cancelled again.
Yeah.
It's going to be repeatedly cancelled. And I have very few of these, but tours that have lots of delayed or postponed dates have 60%, 70% numbers, maybe, and which is bad, obviously, because people have just moved on, or the dates don't suit them anymore, or they've forgotten, or it's not happening, or whatever, and so you're not getting people in. Even tickets you've sold, you're not getting people in because it's just it was 2 years ago.
Yeah.
So I go to Canada to do a tour. The last bit of the tour was supposed to be eight dates in Canada, which is now happening, and I did promo videos from today. And it's really like, yes, it's actually finally happening with that old show. Even though I'm touring another show since,
yeah.
But I'm going to do the old show.
Right.
And I'm going to go and watch it. I'll watch it on the plane over before, maybe slightly before that. But I'll watch it on the way over. Which is always great, by the way. I've had it a couple of times. We haven't done a tour in a while. And you sit and you watch it on your laptop or something. You watch your own show while a stewardess goes, we have literally laid on 189 movies for you to watch on this flight. And yet you would sooner sit there watching yourself wanking furiously.
Could you not just have it on a DVD, like on a computer, just at the front of the stage, and just watch it and then
just
do
watch it?
It
and then repeat it back. Yeah. I can have it played into my ear and just say the words through the awkward time and then go, hey, what do you do for a living? And then do whatever happened the night I was in Hammersmith that night. Like, shut up, I'm not really talking to you. I'm fucking, oh, you repair odometers. And the guys go, no, I'm an accountant. Shut up, I'm doing a thing. And people presume with the audience chat that's what you're doing anyway, so you might as well just make it up with Jesus. Things are happening and it feels normal as well to do them and do the tours now.
But I'm guessing from your point of view, it's feeling amazing to get back after that time away.
Mm.
I mean, I think almost you more than anyone, but I mean, I know most comedians will have feel the same, but...
Yeah. I mean, but then why me more? Yeah.
I just think you know,
I do, I love it.
Really like being in, doing the job.
Yes, I do. Sorry, I'm delighted that's the thing. I thought that was my private feeling. but I do bang on about it. Yeah, no, absolutely it is. It's great. Yeah. It's great to have done a body of it and to see loads of those dates ahead and to know that these I'm going to go to these places. I love going to the places and it's great to do that as well. Great to have a show and I like this show. The show is a really personal show. It's a really kind of slightly honest show. It's a funny show, but it's like a lot of honest stuff in it. And because that was you had to do, it ends up being kind of a series. It's a show which is very different to shows I've done as well. Funny, but there's a whole big long story about a whole thing about my family and all that, like which comes at the end, which is a long thing. And actually, sometimes audiences go, "Fuck, I wasn't expecting this." And you're going, "Well, you're in." and I like the luxury of because a lot of formats you do don't suit me. Don't see me, like, I mean, I'm doing this for 25 years, like, whatever, and I'm well aware of where I fit and where I don't fit, like, whatever. And a lot of things that people have to do really quick, things like that, like, whatever. I'm famously slow and don't like talking quickly or getting around. But I need a head of steam.
Yeah.
And it's the six or seven people that scramble, you really elbowing in to get stuff, like, whatever. Whereas on stage, I can drive the speed of it, whatever. I can slow it down or make it fast, whatever. And I really love the creation of those shows and doing those shows and having that luxury of people in the room, like, whatever. It's a really nice thing to do, to have the ownership of, right, I'm going to pick where we're going to go now. And you're in. The doors are locked. And there's no way you're going nowhere. And I'm in charge of how this is going to go up and down, like whatever. And that's fun to do. So, yeah, I adore it. Yeah.
I mean, a lot of people would be in your position and not, you know, in a regular job, even just Mock the Week, if it was just that, and it's not just that. But to have that, and it's been going for all those years, and it's this regular income... A lot of people would sit back on that and go, oh, I don't need to do the stand-up anymore.
Yeah, but I always felt that TV was just an ad for life. I always felt that, I mean, that's been maybe an inappropriate thing to say to TV people who go, this is my life. And I go, no, you really are just a tool I use. Anyway, lovely to work with you. So I always thought it was just an ad for the live stuff, like whatever. And some of the stuff has been a format. Like I know it's kind of slightly, think, is that the wrong thing to do? If I'm not doing a thing that makes you go, oh, I must see him live, then what the hell, you know. But I'm not saying that Mock the Week always was. Mock the Week is kind of a messy format for me in some ways because it is quite punchy and I don't say very much for large chunks of it. It's become more conversational as a new generation of comics come who are themselves more conversational. It's less elbows and clubby and... Yeah. Who's a series of killer one-liners. So it's become more fun to do. But it won't last forever, Mark, obviously. But but it's always just been that's fine, but really got to go see this. You got to go see when I have the whole thing and I can create the whole show.
Sure.
So that's always been my thing. Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. But there are, it was really, I mean, almost you could list them. Jimmy, Sarah, Bill, myself, Daniel Sloss, who do this and also do this, grab every international gig we can do and do that, like whatever. It's kind of circle of people who managed to, because the internet spill out into that, like whatever, and want to tour in places, like whatever. I remember being once in Northern Norway, in a place called Tromsø, Northern Norway, whatever. There's about 900 people in. I said, this would be great to do a show here. God, this mustn't happen very often. And someone said, no, Bill Bailey was here yesterday. Touche. It's grand. They're going, I mean, your show's less musical. It's good. But that's kind of, it's kept it fun and exciting because there's new places to go.
Yeah.
So that's been really good.
Let me ask you an emergency question.
Please, ask me any emergency question you want.
I will ask you. I'm going to ask you.
I will give short answers that are to the point.
Okay.
And in no way will I drift off into a thing.
Okay, that would be a shame, but let's see.
I'm lying.
Go I know, yeah. I know. If you were put in the chrysalis and could change into anything that you wanted to be, what would you come out of the chrysalis? You could change into anything.
I'd be a backing singer.
Yeah.
Or in a backing band to Prince round about the 1999
tour. Not a time-travelling chrysalis.
Okay.
No, it is. It could be whatever you want.
I just like being...
You can't go back in time. Didn't you listen to Stephen Hawking?
Oh, really?
Yeah.
Well, it can be anything at all, but it has to be now.
You can be... You could, in the chrysalis, you could recreate whatever you want from the past.
But can I be gifted to something? Can I be amazing?
Yeah, you can be. You can do whatever you want.
Really?
Yeah.
I'd be one of the
it's
guys...
It's not going to happen.
No, okay, fine. Okay. I would be one of the muscle men who comes out and used to do that. Do you remember that act? That'd be a great act to have. Bum, bum, oh, bum, yeah. Bum, bum, bum. And you'd move your fucking tits up and down for that. Could you imagine that as a new direction? If I came out and they said, okay, you know him as host of Mock the Week and stand-up, here's Dara Breen, and I walk out in a tux. Oh, he's dead! He's not dead. And then I drop the tux. I'm really ripped. Really fucking ripped, right? And then the music starts, bum, 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 bum. And then I just move me fucking pecs up and down. That was a fucking act. That was how easy it was to make a living in this country in showbiz 30 years ago. Go on the Paul Daniel show and just move your fucking tits around.
You could make it happen. You could work. You could put the work in and do
it
that.
It is. It was like it was a choice. That music was so weird. Dun 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 dun, dun. And then you dun 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 dun, bum bum bum, and you move another muscle around. Almost as weird as stripper music. Stripper music. Do you remember old stripper music?
Yeah.
Because new stripper music is just, I presume, just R&B or whatever, and people in the pole or whatever. But old stripper music, it would be great. We had a game myself and Ed once, which was, what music, if you could go on the decks at a strip club and you could pick any piece of music and they would have to fucking just go with it because it was like dance two, and they had to fucking do the dance, like whatever, what would be the worst piece of music to do, right? And we settled on... War of the Worlds by Jeff Lynne with full spoken word introduction by Richard Burton. So as they're on the ladies on the pole, you're going, who could have known at the turn of the century that across the universe envious eyes gazed upon our planet and laid their plans for our destruction. That whole thing, like, would be very, very good. But equally be weird if you suddenly put the stripper music on.
Yeah.
That'd be the fucking weirdest thing. If you're in some fucking club and somebody's on and you play the bram, 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 bram. Why was that music sexy? What was sexy about bram, 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 bram? And just watch a current dancer go, what the fuck am I supposed to do with that? It's fucking classic. Do the fucking whole stuff. Ba-dum, 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 ba-dum. That would be a fucking test of any fucking stripper's medal. I think it'd be amazing to watch that happen.
It's no going for gold. That's all I'm saying.
It's not going for gold.
It's no going for gold.
So strip club DJ. That's who I would be. I'd be strip club DJ who the strippers keep complaining about. Can you please get rid of that guy? He is not helping the situation. It was hot in here. That makes sense. I can fucking dance to hot in here, right? And then, for some reason, it was, you know, Teddy Bear, the country and western song about the... No, you don't know that song. We're very, very obscure. Sorry. Then it was, you know, Simon Shammah's spoken history word.
It'd be a chant. I don't think the music matters. It's interesting. It is an interesting point about that stripper music. I guess that Morecambe and Wise may have... killed it as a sexy thing.
But why was it even before
that?
And did people go, oh, I can't wank to this, Morecambe and Wise, they make it some toast. I once said to David O'Doherty, who's a good friend of mine and a very huge, his dad was one of Ireland's legendary jazz musicians, and Dave does jazz very well. And I said to Dave, oh, Dave, I've come up with a new piece of material. I said, what is it? He said, it's about how occasionally there are classical, you know, I mean, the things that are like canonical in culture, and you haven't seen them, you read them or listened to them, whatever, but you've heard the reference to them repeated, like whatever. And I said, I finally said, you know what I'm going to do? I'm going to listen to Kind of Blue by Miles Davis. I'm finally going to actually take that journey and listen to Kind of Blue. And it's really surprising when you listen to it because it's actually just the Benny Hill music. I mean, slow down. Like, and he does it for 7 minutes. I mean, he really does beautiful things with it, like whatever. But it's very definitely just the Benny Hill music. And David Riley went, never tell that joke.
I'll ask you. I know you may have been in last week and heard this question, but I'll ask you the question about if every art gallery and museum in the world got together and said you could have anything you wanted because they loved you so much, but only one thing. Which one thing would you take?
Do I line them up so they do not know? So they're all the curators of all the art galleries are going, pick me, pick me, pick me, or don't pick. I don't know what deal with the devil we've made. Whereas I went, I want that, I want that, I want that. I would go on a fucking spree. Can I do it like a supermarket thing?
Yeah.
Where I've got a trolley and I'm just firing fucking monies into the case and I'm just grabbing shit off the walls like whatever and I'm going.
Yeah, why not?
Yeah, fuck it, that'd be great. I want everything. Fuck that audience. And I'm on roller skates pushing my way to this kind of super gallery of like whatever. There's a ton of things I would take. There's a ton I would take. Rodin's big metal Doors of Hell, which is in the Museum of Doors, which is fantastic. Just these inscriptions of people just writhing and painting. Like, well, that's amazing. I would take anything by the Impressionist space. Nothing pre-1850, nothing fucking biblical based, nothing, no classical stuff. Boring. And all of it, I damn you all. And then Jack Yates, who is Ireland's legendary Impressionist painter, fabulous man. Jack Yates, I don't know if you're familiar with the work of Jack Yates.
I'm not very familiar.
Brother of William Butler Yeats, who is himself one of but Jack Yates is Ireland's greatest painter of all time, and it's really interesting. He incredible, incredible impressionistic work. But his peak period started when he was 71. When he was 71, he'd done about 800 paintings at that stage, and between 71 and 95, he painted another 1,600 paintings, and they're astonishing, they're incredible, and they're all based on memory, and they're all done from memory because he just sat in Dublin painting all these vistas he's seen during his life, but in an incredibly kind of impressionistic way. It's brilliant. There's an entire wing of his work in the National Gallery in Dublin, which is incredible and worth seeing, like whatever. But actually, probably I'd nick a Bridget Riley.
Okay.
Bridget Riley, one of the large canvas Bridget Riley's from the mid to late 80s, and have one of those, like whatever, and go for that, like whatever, because I love Bridget Riley's work. I have incorrectly called her Bridget Christie in a number of interviews, and it's been very interesting. If people go, oh, and you've an artist, I go, oh, Bridget Christie. And they've gone, that's weird. Okay, you really love her stuff? Yeah, it's good. Yeah, it's good. I mean, her geometric work in particular is incredible. Like, yeah, it's good.
She had to draw Greg Davis with a lipstick this week. That was quite good.
Oh,
so
I didn't see it yet.
Haven't
been on the show yet, man.
No, we haven't been on that show. I was going to ask you.
And do you know what's really irritating about Taskmaster? It's at the end of my fucking road. and it's actually now on the maps. It's on the map. So when I do the school run, I get to the end, I get to the turn at the end of my road, and the map says Taskmaster House, mocking me for my non-participation in Taskmaster. Like
it can only be a matter of time. It's harder for us middle-aged men to get on there.
Oh, it's so tough now. We're not woke enough to get onto the show, are we not? Is that it? Are we not cool? Are we not new enough? I'm Irish. We used to be diversity. We were diversity once. It was incredible. You'd have me or Ed or both. Oh, both was too much. And you go, incredible. We've got so many voices from so many different communities. And now we're just thinking. Yeah, no, there is. I know where the seat is. If I ever get asked to do it, I know what my chair is. I'm ready for the ironic reinvention when that happens. Oh, I only knew him for this, but look at him now. He's so game for a laugh. It's incredible, yeah. But end of my road, literally end of my road.
Oh, well, don't let everyone can work out where you live now.
Can they?
Yeah, if it's the end of your road.
Okay,
do you live in the
have
golf
to get
club?
To that Taskmaster house first and then work backwards.
Yeah, everyone knows where the golf, the Taskmaster house is.
Oh, shit, I've given too much away.
You have to move. I'll take your house in Chiswick. That'll be fine. That'll be fine for me. Anything exciting coming up, Dara, that you would like to? Is it just touring forever?
I'm going
forever?
To tour the shit out of this show.
Yeah.
And I'm loving it, and it's all beautiful, and there's a bit, and I'm going to do the hell of it for the next year. And that's the predominant thing. Yeah, TV stuff will come and go, and who knows? And we're back in Mock in September. But but predominantly, I'll be talking nonsense and doing that. That'll happen a lot. But honestly, without break. At the end of the summer, for example, I go back to Canada and finish off the previous tours with the dates that were supposedly supposed to happen in March of 2020.
Yeah.
And I'm sort of looking forward to doing that.
Because you had to escape from America, right?
I had to race. I'd done America the first time ever. I'd done America, which is real. That's tough to break into that bubble of America. It's tough to break in. And we got some people in, but there's a lot of it was like, thanks to the expat community. Some comedy nerds were in, like whatever, but it's a tough one to break through. But we did it, and it was all very satisfying. And a few days off, and I was on the airport, and this is the only bit that sounded like material because I have done this material, so I'll tell you it properly here. I was in one of the airports, I don't know, not New York, the other one, LaGuardia. And I was literally about to put the bag onto the thing to book to go to Toronto to the Canadian tour when the text came through going, they're shutting everything down. Everything's stopping now. Get out of there. So I had to go, I had to get back into a taxi again to go all the way to JFK, which is luckily the same side of New York where all the BA flights came over. And I had to go from BA back to London. And BA do like 6 flights a night. And I thought, there must be a seat. I don't have a seat. I don't have a ticket. I have a ticket from Vancouver in a week's time to London. Maybe like take that in exchange. And I went and I thought, I'm going to have this. This, I said, shall be the performance of a lifetime. I shall create, oh my God, I will. And I went to the desk and the woman said, I said, look, I need to, I don't have a ticket, but my family, oh my God, there is a pandemic coming. Please get me home to my family so I can draw them in and I could look after them. Please, oh my God, somebody needs to fight for tins of beans in a supermarket in a while. Like, and I did a whole thing of, I've got to get back, please, I've got to get back. It's anything we do, I've got to fight. And she said, no, we can swap the ticket. She even said, look, it's a more expensive ticket you have because it's from Toronto. I said, I don't mind. I don't care. I just need to be home soon. And she said, no problem. And so she went tappity tap, tap, tap. And she said, okay, I've got your seat. And she said, it's on a plane. It leaves in about half an hour, so you'd have to run. And I was there beside her going, I wanted a bit of dinner. I mean, you know, and I was hoping to buy some of those earbuds, the noise cancelling ones, and I really wanted to get some gift for the kids. But it's too late now to go, do you have a later one than that, actually? Because I've really gone big on, I need to get home now. And so I had to run to the airport in a real, I should have just said any flight tonight, but I had to run to the airport and ran all the way to JFK where they're pulling the door closed on the jetway.
Right.
And I ran to, and I arrived onto the plane, sweating and out of breath, and sat down to somebody who thought, oh great, there's nobody on my, they're about to close the doors, I've got an extra seat to myself. And then I arrive in with fucking sweat dripping off me, the worst passenger to be sitting beside in March of 2020. I sit down beside and go, oh, I'm hot, are you hot? I wasn't hot, but I'm suddenly hot. I'm so hot, jeez, I'm so hot, I can't breathe. Oh my God, oh, hold my hand, I don't know what to do. Like, let's go.
Fabulous. Well, I'm delighted you got home. I'm delighted we're no longer at home and very much look forward to going to see Dara on tour, please. Ladies and gentlemen, the amazing Dara Breen! Thank you very much for coming. Thank you very much. You have been listening to Rahulastapa with me, Richard Herring, and my guest, Dara O'Brien. Thank you to Scamp Regard, who provide the music to this show. I'm indebted to my producer, Ben Walker. I'm indebted to Chris Evans, not that one, and everyone at Go Faster Strike, and all the team who record these shows, and everyone at the Leicester Square Theatre, and all those cool kids at ACAS. I would also like to thank the following people for backing our Kickstarter reward. Bruno Pacciaudi, David Hinchcliffe, Theakston, Dave Curran, Matt Sladen, Ian with two eyes, Ralphonzi El Magnifico, Steve Bradbury, Gary McLennan, Stephen Blair, Ewan Benson, David Boston, Alec Watson, John Lewis, not the shop, Andy McH, Greg, Sarah Hewitt, Steve Green, Emma F, JPH, Nick Huntington, David Frew, all the classics are in this episode, Guy, all the big ones, David Frew, Andy McH, they're all here. Ewan Benson, they're all here. Guy Trevellan Edwards, Howie Collie, Pemsey Poodles, Arch Drood, Michelle Boland, Mike Conley, Zelda Pendlebury, Martin Harris, Moomin Biscuit, Isabel Lorien, Pete Aitken, A. Shrek, Rachel K. Robertson. This is a Sky Potato Fuzz and GoFasterStrike.com production. Thank you for listening. Head to GoFasterStrike.com to buy downloads and books of mine and lots of cool comedians, shows and other stuff they do. Thank you to Chris Evans again for all his hard work. Goodbye.
Hey, everyone. Craig Robinson here. I want you to check out the Ways to Win podcast, brought to you by Ford and the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. On Ways to Win, Coach Cal and I will discuss leadership lessons we've learned. We know all about the days spent perfecting your craft outside of the limelight and have knowledge to share about how strength, inspiration, encouragement, and adaptability are the key ingredients to drive toward your dreams. And those same ingredients can be found in the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. So check out my podcast, Ways to Win, and also check out the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. Learn more at Ford.com. Built Ford tough, built Ford proud.
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Hey, it's Paige DeSorbo from Giggly Squad. High quality fashion without the price tag. Say hello to Quince. I'm snagging high-end essentials like cozy cashmere sweaters, sleek leather jackets, fine jewelry, and so much more. With Quince being 50 to 80% less than similar brands. And they partner with factories that prioritize safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. I love that. Luxury quality within reach. Go to quince.com/style to get free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. quince.com/style.
Thanks very much for listening to the podcast. Go to gofasterstripe.com for fantastic downloads and books and to join the Go Faster Stripe Club and get loads of stuff from really interesting comedians. Help little Chris Evans knock that one out. That would be lovely. All right, richardherring.com for all my gigs. Hope to see you at a gig. Come and say hi after if you've enjoyed these podcasts. Don't come if you haven't enjoyed them and say you haven't enjoyed them. It'll make me feel sad.